From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy. This week we're broadcasting from the Center for American Progress Studios in Washington, D.C.
Pulpit Freedom Sunday is intended to restore a pastor's right to speak freely from the pulpit without fearing any governmental intimidation, censorship, or punishment.
It started in the fall of 2008. A handful of pastors stepped up to their pulpits one Sunday and deliberately violated the Johnson Amendment, an interpretation of the United States Tax Code passed in 1954 that spelled out the limits on political campaigning by tax-exempt institutions, including houses of worship. Pulpit Freedom Sunday has turned into an annual event. Its ultimate purpose, to provoke a Supreme Court case that supporters expect would lead to striking down the Johnson Amendment. Americans United for the Separation of Church and State has been doing important work in this area, and Executive Director Barry Lynn will join me later in the show to talk about this year's Pulpit Freedom Sunday.
At a time when much of the Muslim world is still seething over the California-made movie ridiculing the Prophet Muhammad, adverts some have dubbed inflammatory have popped up in New York subway stations.
Last week, New York City subway riders were greeted by a jarring advertising poster displayed in 10 busy stations. It reads in part, "Support Israel, defeat jihad." Leading the opposition to these provocative and irresponsible ads is the Interfaith Center of New York, and Executive Director Reverend Chloe Breyer will be with us to brief us on those efforts. But first,
homosexuality breaks the law of God, the law of nature, the law of the land, and the law of our traditional cultures.
Homosexuality is illegal.
Periodically on State of Belief, we've covered the chilling story of the sometimes deadly marginalization of the LGBT community in Uganda. Despite the failure of the so-called Bahati Kill the Gays bill to pass, so far, second-class citizenship would be a step up for most of Uganda's LGBT population. You see, this didn't go away after the Bush administration. Well, how has it come to this? You've heard Jeff Charlotte describe the unhealthy relationship between a secretive group known as the Family and far-right lawmakers in Washington and the role they've taken in encouraging Uganda's anti-gay climate. You've heard activists talk about the way some conservative religious leaders from the West actively sowed the seeds for an anti-gay crusade in Uganda that stars both government and church figures. But look, it even gets worse. A leading journalist who's been covering this story on the ground in Uganda says, "Our tax dollars, yours and mine, are directly funding some of the most egregious attacks on sexual minorities there." And here to tell us more is that journalist, Andy Kopsa, whose work appears in Religion Dispatches magazine, the American Independent, Alternet, and many other publications. Andy, thanks for being with us on State of Belief Radio. It's good to see you again.
Yes, you too. Thank you for having me.
It is almost unthinkable that everyday Americans have had a hand in creating the deadly atmosphere of hatred and intolerance LGBT people face today in Uganda. But your research shows that's exactly what has happened. Tell us about that.
Right. I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head when you said people kind of thought that this went away with the Bush administration. Obama toned it down a bit, but it's still happening. I went to Uganda a few weeks ago to investigate a very specific, well-funded, well-connected NGO, non-governmental organization that has received upwards of $40 million since the Bush administration and still continues to receive money. They're currently being investigated for fomenting an environment of anti-LGBT feelings through implementing PEPFAR projects, whether they're sexual education programs, distributing condoms, which is required that they're not doing. And they're just one of many leftovers from the Bush era that are still getting funding. They just got $2 million in July.
What is the source of that money in government? Where is it coming from?
Ultimately, it comes from the Department of Health and Human Services through the various places, but specifically in Uganda, it's PEPFAR and USAID.
I see.
Yeah. And so, and that's administered through the CDC.
So from our government to Uganda,
right,
to an NGO,
right,
that is supposed to be doing what?
This specific organization has clinics that distribute antiretroviral and preventative care. Now, the big problem is that they are doing some good with the ARV treatments. And then they're helping families that can't afford mm-hmm. that. But the other side of the coin is that there's the preventative side, and that's where they're falling down. Because in Uganda, prevention strategies are very tricky. Because condoms, which are prescribed under PEPFAR, you have to talk about and distribute condoms. Those have to be made available as part of the prevention program. Condoms are synonymous with bad things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, condoms are synonymous with sex, which we don't want to talk about. The evangelicals on the ground there that have created that environment, that lingers. That didn't go mm-hmm. away. And so they're falling down on the prevention side of it. So I'll give you an example. I went to a clinic in Kampala and was taken into a room where supposedly there were supposed to be condoms there. Now, the woman that was helping me didn't want to talk about condoms. She actually told me when I asked her, you know, so what do you distribute condoms here? And she said, "Oh, we're suspicious of those things," which was just, you know, kind of sent a chill up my spine because there's a large chunk of the budget that's for prevention.
Yeah, yeah.
And also they were supposed to be able to provide me with their sexual education curriculum, which they couldn't do. And I don't think that that's a coincidence. I think that that's a direct product of their ideology. And so another thing, too, that you and I have spoken about is this idea of separation of church and state, time and place, and some of those issues. And there was – I'm a big fan of the Virgin Mary, but there was a lot of religious iconography around, which is concerning to me because it's a federally funded space that should be – you know, we have Kampala's Muslims and every religion. So they're falling down on a couple things, I think, from my personal experience, is the prevention very clearly, very clearly.
Andy, I mean, this is stunning. How long has this been going on?
Oh, years, 20. I mean, it's, you know, we can trace abstinence back to, you know, Reaganish,
yeah,
right?
So yeah,
that's where we go. But it really got teeth under Bush.
I see.
And, you know, a lot of people tell me when I'm talking about these things is that that's old news. But I think that we really have to see how that was constructed to understand what's still in place today and what's still being funded today. These things have not disappeared. Mm-hmm. A lot of the outright faith-based funding has, because there's been an outcry or because there's been investigative reporting around it. But, you know, transparency and oversight of these organizations is abysmal here, and it's even worse there. So that's how these things keep going. And it's a long tradition. So, you know, years and years.
On the other side of all this is the claim by Uganda to reject help from any NGO that, quote, promotes homosexuality.
Right.
You brought with you a recording of your interview with the Ugandan Minister of Ethics. Tell us what we're going to hear.
It's Father Simon Lokoto, who's a defrocked priest who is the head of ministry and ethics. And so I had asked him about this specific bill. The way he described it was a bill that expels NGOs that are gay friendly. And so he supposedly had a list of 38 organizations. I had asked him, can I see these 38? Because he admitted that there were probably some American groups among them. He said it wasn't any of my business. And I said, but, you know, sir, this hasn't become law yet. And he said, I don't care. You know, and this could be political rhetoric, this could be grandstanding, but I don't think it's insignificant because he speaks as a minister of ethics and integrity, you know, for Uganda.
If they have got a linkage with LGBT, today they are not operational in Uganda.
But the bill hasn't been voted on yet.
I don't care.
Okay.
I don't care.
Andy, what else did you hear from Simon Lakota that was noteworthy?
I asked him very directly about the idea of LGBT rights as civil rights. And he said that it was, quote, rubbish, that that idea is not Ugandan in nature, that that's an American idea. He also told me that, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but it was just they are being poisoned, that, you know, the U.S. is feeding them food, but it's laced with poison. And this is all within the context of, you know, homosexuality. And he also told me something that I made sure that I got clear was that he was happy to walk away from PEPFAR and USAID. And I said, well, that's, you know, that's something. Lakota told me as well that on all of these things, on all of the civil rights is rubbish and these kinds of things, an expulsion of NGOs that are gay friendly, he said, you know, Mrs. Museveni and I are in lockstep over this. And, you know, she has a lot of power for a first lady. She's also an MP. So, you know, whether or not it's political grandstanding, because I got that sense from him, he was very much like wanted to be the next Bahati and be splashed all over the Western media. Whether or not it's that or genuine is almost immaterial. It's what he's putting out. And it's how we have enabled that and continue to enable that by funding numerous organizations that are under investigation right now.
Talk about the way these kinds of political shenanigans impact the lives of people in Uganda.
That was the most disturbing part. There's so much that's disturbing about this, but I spent a day with a trans woman. Her name was Mish, and she had been beaten terribly in a hate crime, which doesn't exist in Uganda because there is no hate crime because LGBT persons don't have rights. So I spent the day with her blackened and bloodied eye, and a group of human rights defenders. And we were in a car driving around Kampala trying to get her medical attention, police attention, and to find witnesses. This affects LGBT people on the ground to an extent that I don't think people really understand. It sounds crazy when I talk about it, but we were whisked away in this sort of clandestine series of meetings with people from foreign embassies that I can't mention, at hospitals I can't mention, and going to look for witnesses at the bar where she was brutalized and having the bartender tell us that nobody was working there anymore that was there that night, and it was only 2 days ago. Going to the police station and being asked, is this a boy or a girl? Instead of, you know, what can we do to solve this crime?
If this is happening with American money in Uganda, it could be happening anywhere around the world.
It is happening.
It is happening in other places,
too. Yes, of course it is. Yeah, but the thing is that, you know, it's because these organizations, the organization that I had mentioned earlier, has branches here. You know, they teach abstinence only until marriage, which is heterosexual marriage, which is Christian ideal of marriage, that can be very stigmatizing. But they have places in a lot of sub-Saharan Africa. It's a very ripe testing ground. But they're also going into places like Moldova all of a sudden, which I think, by the way, is not – it's important to mention that, you know, Scott Lively, which I think your audience probably is aware of, went into Uganda but also recently went into Moldova.
I see.
And again, this is just one organization.
I've been speaking with journalist Andy Kopsa, who's working on exposing the way U.S. taxpayer-funded NGOs are contributing to the deadly anti-gay atmosphere in Uganda. You can read what Andy's writing on her website, andykopsa.com, and in publications including Religion Dispatches magazine. Andy, thanks so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
I want to thank you for continuing to bring attention to this issue.
We've got to take a short break, but coming right up, the Reverend Barry Lynn, Executive Director of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, will be talking about Pulpit Freedom Sunday. And later in the show, Interfaith Center of New York Executive Director Reverend Chloe Pryor will brief us about the response to those Islamophobic posters now plastered around New York's subway system. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. Welcome back to State of Belief Radio, everyone. I'm Welton Getty. Since 1947, Americans United has been working to preserve the vital separation between church and state in this country. One aspect of that separation is the ban on political campaigning by tax-exempt faith organizations, a ban that's being challenged once again this year by an organized effort labeled Pulpit Freedom Sunday. And here to talk about that effort, as well as the work of Americans United in trying to discourage it, is a longtime friend and a longtime AU Executive Director, Reverend Barry Lynn. Barry, welcome to State of Belief.
Thank you very much. Nice to be back.
Pulpit Freedom Sunday is scheduled for October 7th this year. What is Pulpit Freedom Sunday?
Pulpit Freedom Sunday starts out with a false belief that somehow the pulpits of America are not free. Now, let people think about this. If you know that Pat Robertson is still preaching, now that he's a minister again, got reordained, and Jesse Jackson's preaching, if you have people with that diversity speaking about issues, the same issue from opposite sides usually, you know that we have a free pulpit. What these groups are doing, particularly one out in Scottsdale, Arizona, that is recently, it's better known as the Alliance Defense Fund. It's changed its name recently to protect the guilty. It claims that what we need to do, if you're a minister, they say you should preach and endorse candidates from the pulpit on October the 7th, hoping that the Internal Revenue Service tries to crack down on you, tries to say that take away, as they would say, your free speech rights, and then they will challenge, they will mount a challenge to the law that prohibits not just churches, but any nonprofit, any charitable institution from endorsing or opposing a candidate for public office. I mean, this is simple. They want you to cross the line. They want you to break the law. And then they want to find a way to challenge this legally. What they don't tell you, Walton, is it's already been challenged. It was challenged in a very early initiative of my own, reporting a church that was a home church of Randall Terry.
Right.
We wrote a letter to the IRS. We said these guys had taken out a $40,000 ad in USA Today. They should be investigated. They were. The church lost its tax exemption, and they sued. They lost. They lost at the appeals court. They lost at the most conservative panel of justices up here on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. Their lawyers told them don't go to the Supreme Court. Now these folks down in Scottsdale want to take another case. It's a loser.
We've got to take a short break, but I'll be back to talk some more with Americans United Executive Director Barry Lynn in just a minute. Later in the show, the Reverend Chloe Breyer of the Interfaith Center of New York will be here to talk about the response to anti-Muslim ads that have gone up in the city's subway system. There will be more of this conversation and of all of the interviews on this week's show available online at stateofbelief.com. I'm Welton Getty. You're listening to State of Belief Radio. Be right back. This free State of Belief radio podcast is brought to you by Interfaith Alliance, representing 185,000 members across the U.S., drawn from 75 different faith traditions. We're committed to protecting faith and freedom. Find out about the work we do to protect the boundaries between religion and government and unite diverse voices to challenge extremism and build common ground by visiting our website, interfaithalliance.org. Whether you care deeply about minority religious rights, school bullying, LGBT discrimination, the influence of religion on politics, or the influence of politics on religion, Interfaith Alliance is working on initiatives you'll want to support. Learn more and become a member at interfaithalliance.org. Welcome back to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Getty. My guest is the Reverend Barry Lynn, Executive Director of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. What are they doing? I mean, they know the truth. They know this has been ruled unconstitutional. What are they doing?
What they want to do is create this fiction that this is one more example of a war against Christianity. They want to allege that anybody who investigates them, no matter what their misconduct may be, is just part of some kind of cabal with the Internal Revenue Service and, of course, President Obama to somehow silence the church if the church doesn't say the things the government wants. And that has happened in other countries. These are other countries, though. This is this country. There is no effort. And in fact, Martin Luther King Jr., I think we both had the opportunity at least once to march with Dr. King. He spoke in churches, in synagogues, every night almost of his adult life. He never, ever endorsed a candidate for public office. Why? Because he knew, and at that time the African-American church was even more powerful an entity than it is today within communities, but he knew it wasn't the right venue to start telling you who to vote for, whether that was for sheriff or for president of the United States. These folks that want to change the law, these people who want to sue, they want to get sued so they can go to the Supreme Court, miss our history and miss something else about their own church. And you know this very well, as I do. Sometimes you give a sermon, it's about, well, just a public issue. Mm-hmm. People get upset. Some people walk out. Maybe somebody leaves the church. You start telling them who to vote for, more people walk out. Sure. It deeply divides congregations. So once again, separating church and state is good for the church as well as for the state.
Barry, I really like what you and Americans United are doing to counter Pulpit Freedom Sunday. You sent out letters to a large number of pastors. Tell us a little more about that.
Right. We took a cross-section of American churches and focused particularly on churches where either the president or Governor Romney are members of these churches, the United Church of Christ, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, reminding them, and we sent 60,000 of these out, reminding them that there is a law, pointing them to the exact place they can get more information from the Internal Revenue Service. Examples, for example, documents that say, you know, this you can do. Don't worry about voter registration, but do worry if your archdiocesan newsletter prints a letter from the bishop saying Obama is horrible, don't vote for him. And sadly, we've seen these. Mm-hmm. We've seen these in church bulletins, Protestant and Catholic, and we did report the bishop recently of Peoria, Illinois, when in a sermon he compared Barack Obama to both Hitler and Stalin in the same sermon. Can he say it? Yes. Can he tell you, as this guy did, oh, by the way, so of course don't vote for him? No, that you can't do. You cannot affirmatively say vote for, vote against, or indicate, in other words, that that's your purpose.
You and I both, in fact, on the same panel have talked with members of Congress about this kind of issue coming up. And the IRS says always that they don't have enough people to investigate what's going on. Do you think the IRS will be any more attentive this year to these violations?
There is a technical issue that needs to be resolved in IRS regulations before they can look at the backlog of these cases. And, you know, contrary to the critics of Americans United, we don't just file these willy-nilly. I was just in the paper this morning somewhere saying, you know, this guy came up to the precipice. He didn't jump off. That's good. We don't want him to. But other people have. And we hope that the egregious examples that we present will, in fact, be investigated as soon as a minor technical change is made in some regulations allowing this to go forward. You know, it's tough to investigate churches for any reason thanks to special privilege legislation that's been passed. But now it's time to get serious about this because we could end up with a corruption not only of the political process but of the integrity of the genuine prophetic message in churches, which is talking and critiquing government when appropriate, is not telling you who to vote for dog catcher.
Mm-hmm. You know, Barry, it's in many ways been a very difficult year for Americans who are committed to true religious freedom, especially when religious freedom means both freedom for religion and freedom from religion. So I have to ask, what else are you up to in this regard?
I think the single biggest problem this year has been a redefinition of the very idea of religious freedom. You and I know what it is. It's the right to worship or not to worship. It's the right to engage in rituals that we choose. It's the right to use the holy scriptures we find holy or sacred to control our sacred spaces. Now, sadly, because of efforts of the Conference of Catholic Bishops and some of their Protestant allies in groups like the Family Research Council, we find that a new definition. The definition, in a nutshell, is pretty much this. We demand the right to use our highly paid lobbyists, and they all have them, highly paid lobbyists, to go and get as much tax money as humanly possible for our ministries. And then, by the way, after we get it, we'll tell you we don't want to abide by some rules, some regulations, some civil rights laws of our country. You can't do that. You can't have a comprehensive health care system, Welton, in this country, as you know, unless you cover things like family planning. I was shocked earlier this year when we had people testify in Congress that having a Catholic institution just hand out a piece of paper that says, look, we're not going to cover birth control, but here's where you go. Here's an 800 number. Call them up. That was the same as forcing a rabbi to eat pork. I mean, there's no perspective. Well, people would think, honestly, that religion, the Christian faith, is about not Jesus, but about the intrauterine device. Yeah. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. It is absurd. They are making mountains out of things that are only, barely molehills. There is a dizzying level of religious freedom in this country, even more so if you're a religious majority.
What bothers me now is there are a lot of people who say, I believe in religious freedom, but what they're defining as religious freedom is so different from the Constitution that it's almost antithetical to it. Do you see areas where progress is really being made on authentic religious freedom?
Something like two-thirds of Americans believe that you should not, if you get a tax exemption, you should not be able to use that tax-exempt venue, that pulpit, to tell people who to vote for. We've already won that issue. When it comes to the faith-based initiative, two-thirds of Americans say if you get money, tax dollars from all the people, you got to be open to hiring anybody to run that soup kitchen, run that home for unwed mothers. You have to be open to anyone. You can't discriminate or give special privilege to people of your own faith. We won that debate. We don't like that votes on those things in Congress. We don't even like the way the president has dealt with those issues. But these are things where the public is with us. 2,000 religions in this country, 25 million non-believers, atheists, non-theists. Mm-hmm. We get diversity. We got to preserve it. We can't have government picking favorites or giving special breaks and special privileges to some.
Listeners who want to get involved in Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, both with respect to Pulpit Freedom Sunday and other issues too, how's the best way to make contact with you and get involved?
I think to take a look at our website at www.au.org. AU.org gives you all the information, everything that we're doing, whether it's our big concert series that we're ending this weekend or our magazine or the other resources that we have. It even gives you a place to write a note. If you think your religious freedom, real religious freedom, has been violated, we can't take every case, but we take every effort seriously. And people can get all this information by going to the website.
I've been speaking with Reverend Barry Lynn, Executive Director of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. Appreciate you taking time to run by here and sit with this microphone and be on State of Belief Radio.
I appreciate the opportunity, and I along with many other Americans, are going to be wishing you a happy 15th anniversary and the award that you're going to get for 15 years of service to the Interfaith Alliance.
Great job, Barry.
Thank you
so much. Time for another quick break, and then I'll be joined by the Reverend Chloe Breyer of the Interfaith Center of New York. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. Welcome back to State of Belief Radio, everyone. I'm Welton Gaddy. It took a court order, but last week, 10 advertising posters went up throughout the New York City subway system. Now, this is how ugly the language of those posters is. They read, "In any war between civilized man and the savage, support the civilized man. Support Israel. Defeat jihad." Leading the opposition to these venomous ads is the Interfaith Center of New York, and I'm joined now by its executive director. I will tell you, she's a longtime friend, the Reverend Chloe Breyer. Chloe, thanks for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
This ad campaign was funded by some notorious anti-Muslim activists who've been thoroughly exposed in the excellent report Fear Incorporated from the Center for American Progress. The MTA initially refused the ads, as I understand it. Tell us what happened.
So you're absolutely right. The MTA did all it could to not have to run these ads. However, Pamela Geller, who is a blogger that has been known for her anti-Muslim statements, and had taken the MTA to court. And there was a 30-day injunction that then expired. And on Monday of this week, we saw 10 of these ads go up in subway stations on the platforms in New York, much to the real sadness and regret of so many religious leaders around our city of many different faith traditions. These ads that really spout hatred, you know, we want a real zero tolerance for them, not only among Muslim leaders, but we had Jews, Christians, people of different faith traditions on the steps of City Hall Tuesday morning, first thing to say, we may not agree about everything, but boy, do we agree that these ads and all efforts to really tear us apart are not what the city is all about. They're not our best effort, and they're not what makes us strong.
Chloe, you know New York. It's a city famous for support of free speech at the same time for its celebration of diversity. How have you seen New Yorkers respond to this?
Our fellow citizens are a very creative bunch, I have to say. We've seen everything from a Twitter campaign, which is hashtag My Subway Ads, where people have been submitting on Twitter what their ads would say, to a campaign to have people take photographs of themselves with preferably with an interfaith, a person of a different faith tradition than their own, to kind of counteract the message of the ads, and to post those photographs. There have obviously been artists and other people who've, you know, actually defaced the ads themselves, which is a little more tricky because, you know, that's not an ideal way to show that as New Yorkers we're kind of bigger and better than this. But it certainly has created quite an outpouring of people upset that, you know, such horribly divisive and hateful speech is being used to try to drive us apart. And I think everyone from, you know, 9/11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, you know, we had somebody at our press conference who lost his brother who's a firefighter on 9/11 and just reiterated that as someone who suffered a deep loss there, that the testimony that his brother's life was not spent in vain was his ongoing fight against hatred and exactly the kind of hatred that's being perpetrated by these horrible ads. So I think as New Yorkers, we're used to crossing religious lines and ethnic lines to come together to make our city stronger. And so when we see this type of divisive speech, we're not going to say, you know, this is not going to be how we define ourselves as New Yorkers. And we're used to building bridges, and that's got to be how we respond. While we support free speech, we also, as people of faith, are called to moral or even spiritual speech, something that is a higher ideal that calls us together. And we actually have written to the commissioner of the MTA, Commissioner Loda, and our mayor to ask that space be made available on our subways to run the New York Human Rights Commission ad campaign, which is a really great campaign that points out of many countries, one city.
I think you also asked the MTA to donate the proceeds from these ads to human rights organizations. Have you heard anything back on that?
So I just put in another call. I would say that Commissioner Lota has not been the easiest person to get in touch with, and frankly, I'm the 25 diverse religious and human rights groups who signed on to this letter are disappointed with his response because he's not gotten back to us. And our fellow United Methodist women have actually, you know, pitched in the several thousand dollars it takes to run that many ads and have created their own campaign. It'll be in the same 10 stations that these really offensive ads are in, and they are going to say, however, that hate speech is not civilized, and that, you know, we stand together with our Muslim brothers and sisters. That's a real example of the kind of initiative people are taking to combat the kind of hatred in the in these ads.
The Interfaith Center of New York has additional organized actions to counter this message. Tell us a little about that, if you will.
We're discussing the possibility of a day, a sort of interfaith prayer opportunity that we can have in front of the ads on a particular day later on in the month, because unfortunately they're going to be up there for about a month. You know, if we're gathered in front of these ads and praying in our own religious tradition for an end to hatred, that itself is a strong testimony of the spirit that the city is wants and needs. And so I think we're going to be trying to do that and follow up again with some photographs that can be posted on social media sites.
Chloe, when you first saw the ads, what did it do to you?
Oh, it just, I felt pretty devastated because, of course, it came right on the heels of 9/11, which, you know, as someone who served, like many religious leaders in our city, as a chaplain down at Ground Zero in the months that followed 9/11, and just seeing firsthand that scene of carnage and just wasted life and suffering, I really felt committed to making our city grow, help bring us to a different level of consciousness and appreciating how important it is for people to move beyond their own boundaries and to work together for peace in our city and in our communities. So when I saw this, it just was such a devastating blow and a reminder of how easy it is for people to take advantage of tragedy to sow hatred and fear. And unfortunately, this is not the first time that group has done it. When our friends Imam Faisal and Daisy Khan sought to build a, you know, Islamic center near Ground Zero, these were the same folks who started to spread lies about him and really, you know, fan the flames of fear. And so when I saw it happening again, it just was a sense of real frustration and, you know, why do I have to spend time and energy fighting this kind of nonsense, to be honest?
I see how this unfortunate turn of events could yet lead to increased awareness and a deeper understanding that ultimately we're all on the same side and we need each other. And I hope with your leadership, that's what comes out of this. The Reverend Chloe Briers, the Executive Director of the Interfaith Center of New York. Chloe, thanks for being with us today on State of Belief Radio and continued success in your work.
Thank you so much, and likewise with you. So it's an honor to be on, and thank you for your good work.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Please visit us online at stateofbelief.com. There you can find out more about the show. You can hear extended interviews of parts of which you haven't got to hear, read transcripts, sign up for our podcasts, and you can learn about the new State of Belief app for iPhone and Android devices. And that way you can listen to us anywhere, anytime, and you can tell your neighbors how to do that as well. Share your thoughts on what you've heard today on Facebook and on Twitter. Contact information is available at stateofbelief.com, including our toll-free listener line, 800-856-0277. We encourage you to tell others about this show and encourage them to listen. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. We need your help. We need your presence. We need your support. We need your activism. And join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what?